The Leaning In Leadership Podcast is presented to you by Olivet Nazarene University and Shine.fm. This is a place to lean in to good leadership practices through conversations with great leaders. Lean in and listen close as your host, Dr. Carlos Lonberger, discusses a wide variety of leadership topics to encourage, equip, and empower your leadership.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Leaning In Leadership Podcast this month. I am Carlos Lonberger, and I'm here with my good friend, Dr. Jeff Stark. Jeff is a professor in the School of Theology and Christian Ministry currently at Olivet Nazarene University. He is also the missional director for the Chicago Central District Church of the Nazarene after several years as a lead pastor in Tennessee and in Illinois. Jeff, welcome. Glad you're here today.
It's great to be back. It's good to be back with you, Carlos.
Yeah, it's a blast. We had a great conversation in our last episode about missional leadership. So if you haven't heard that podcast, that episode yet, go back, find it, listen to it. You will love some of the things that we talked about regarding missional leadership there in that podcast. Today, we are going to talk a little bit about how we develop a culture as leaders that reproduces leaders. And there's not really, when people are involved, right, very, you know, magical formula to make this work. A lot of it's trial and error. A lot of it is success and failures and reevaluating, readjusting, reassigning, all of those kinds of things. So let's just kind of dive into the conversation here. And so for you, Jeff, you and I met 4 years ago when you were pastoring Bridgeway Community Church in Pekin, and you inherited a culture there that was really strong. We talked about that in the last episode, but there was a strong leadership development culture in that church. And this isn't just a concept for the church, right?
Correct.
This is a concept of how do leaders reproduce leaders, right? How do we empower, how do we facilitate other folks on our teams to grow in their leadership? For you, why is this concept of leaders developing leaders, reproducing leaders, why is it so important to you and your leadership?
Man, that's a great question, Carlos. So have you ever seen the movie Bagger Vance?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so The Legend of Bagger Vance. So there, if you've not seen it, pause this, go rent it, watch it, and then come back to this conversation.
Don't forget to come back.
You've got to come back.
That last part.
Because we're going to work through some of this. But for me, and I'll just give you a little bit of a quick synopsis. So The Legend of Bagger Vance is about a caddy, a golf caddy, and it's played by Will Smith, right? And so Matt Damon is this great, amazing golfer named Juna, who then goes to the war, comes back, and can't swing a golf club anymore.
Right.
He's awful. He's terrible.
He's got the yips.
He does. And there's the post-traumatic stress that he's incurred during the military has stolen from him that natural capacity that he had. And I would pause there to say, how often is that the case in the people that we work with? We tend to just simply assess people based upon what we see as their competency level, but we don't ever stop to think about how their capacity level has been shaped and formed by the traumas that they've incurred, by the failures that no one's worked them through, from an absence of conversations that might have brought healing, that might have helped them in their areas of competency. We never stop to ask those questions. So Juna is volunteered for this exhibition match with two of the greatest golfers of the time. And out of nowhere, Bagger Vance shows up.
Right.
And he starts to come alongside of Juna. And Juna's like really resistant at first. But there's this one telling moment in the entire movie. Bagger Vance and this little boy that he is developing to be a caddy, which again, I think it's a perfect image for this.
Yeah.
So Bagger Vance is teaching this young boy how to caddy well, takes him out in the middle of the night when it's dark, walking the course, trying to get a feel for the course, and he's on the, you're doing it right now.
He's on
you
the green,
can't
right?
see it, but he's on the green.
I remember.
So they're on the green, and the young boy asks Bagger Vance, he says, can Juna win? And that's when Bagger Vance pauses, and he says, well, if he can find his authentic swing.
Yeah.
And the little boy goes, authentic swing? He goes, each one of us have one, a true, authentic swing, one that can't be learned or taught to us, one we simply got to remember, one that gets buried under the would-haves and could-haves and should-haves of life. And if Juna can find that authentic swing, then he can be something that no one else believes that he can be.
Yeah.
I watched that movie, and I know that there's moments in movies that I think inspire us, but I was inspired because then as I went back and I started reading scripture, I started watching Jesus help his disciples find their authentic swing,
yeah.
Like how they'd been uniquely created to be something so much more than they believed themselves to be. And so for me, as I began to think about my own ministry, my own leadership, I have this natural inclination to not want to be the person.
Yeah.
That goes back to I played offensive line and not quarterback.
Right.
Like I made fun of the quarterbacks but protected them because I felt like they were showboats.
The pretty boys.
That's right. That's right. Now, you got to understand, if you are a quarterback listening to this, I am a 300-pound pure offensive lineman who was
who was
not a pretty boy who probably bears all the marks of never getting the dates in college because because I wasn't the quarterback, so I'm probably dealing with a whole lot of that, and so maybe that's where the animosity comes from.
Nothing plus, under the surface
nothing,
there for you, right?
At all. But I was never the quarterback. I was always the offensive lineman. I always wanted to make the way for the person who could do it.
That's
right?
Good.
And so I sort of bring that with me sort of naturally into my being who I am. And so connecting with this idea of helping people find their authentic swing and realizing that the church is not to be built. Missional leadership, organizations can't simply be built on charisma. Because because charisma, as good as that might be for a time or a spell, when the sands of history shift or when things change around us and that charisma is lost, what holds an organization together?
Right.
But if you can create a culture that empowers leaders to grow, to develop, and to become what they never thought they could become, then you begin to see the longevity of the organization. You begin to think of the possibilities of what could occur. And I tend to believe that we're better together, that we as an organization, as a church, as a congregation, as a nonprofit, we're better as everyone is working out of their best selves. Like they're bringing their unique gifts and talents and competencies and capacities to the table. And that we, as we do this together, always on the eye for the person that is growing up under that system, I think we are better together. And so for me, you put all of those pieces together, that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this subject.
I've heard you use that story or that explanation before that, you know, you're a lineman and a coach, not a quarterback or, you know, some sort of prima donna receiver that always wants the ball, spotlight and the attention, which is great. You know, so for me, I love to see other people succeed. It's one of my passions in leadership, and I'm really comfortable in the spotlight. I'm really comfortable being in front of people. I'm good there. I know that about me, but that stuff kind of comes naturally. And people see that, right, in a leader. They see the spotlight.
Sure.
But what I love is to see other people succeed.
Yeah.
I love putting the right people on the right bus, in the right seat, doing the right things that fit their gifts and their capacities and their potential, right? So my associate director, you know, she tells me all the time that Carlos doesn't look for, the person to fill a spot. He looks for the right people and then finds work for them to do.
That's
you know?
Key.
So you find those
yes.
pieces, right? You know, you find people who are passionate about what you do and they get the vision and they get the idea. And then you hopefully just get them in the door, right? You're hopeful to get good people in the door and then put them in a spot to succeed and really see them take off and run, right? So for you, when you're in that process, when you're in the process of trying to identify not just a person to take a spot on your team, but someone who could be on your team for a while, but that you know could become a really exceptional leader and has the capacities to do those things well beyond just serving under you. What do you look for?
Man.
What do you look for when you're trying to identify great potential leadership or great leadership potential in someone?
That's a great question. So I think for me, from the get-go, is initiative. So we're going to get to the character piece because I think that is core, but I want to start with initiative. I have trouble bringing someone along that doesn't demonstrate any sort of initiative at all. If they're constantly waiting on for me to do something to get them to do something, then probably for me that's not going to go very far. In fact, there's a great story that it's out of the Bible, it's out of the Old Testament. King Saul and Jonathan, his son, are on the edge of a battle, and King Saul was sort of kicked back under the trees. And Jonathan's like, why are we waiting around here? Like, what is happening here? So he grabs his armor bearer and he didn't wait for permission. Nobody told him to go. He said, we're gonna go up there and we're gonna challenge the Philistines on our own. Yeah. Like we're gonna do this.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it's gonna go. And I would much rather have young leaders say, there's something that needs to be done. I may have to ask for forgiveness later, right? I may have to clean up a little bit of a mess later, but I'm at least going to give it a shot. And I'm always looking for those leaders who are going to say, I'm going to lean in where no one else wants to lean in. I'm going to go and do the things that no one else wants to do, and I'm going to take a shot even if no one else will take that shot.
Yeah.
Because for me, that is the demonstration that they're willing to take the initiative and to live with the consequences. So part of the reason why people don't take initiative is because they don't want to live with the consequences.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to identify people as leaders, people who don't want to deal with consequences are always going to opt for the easier way out. And so in terms of empowering people to lead, you have to have people that are bold enough and courageous enough to be willing to fail big, because yeah. every leadership development process is about learning how to fail big and growing from those failures. Very few people I have ever met have this sort of sublime trajectory where they just sort of got in and they just nailed it all the time.
Yeah.
And if they do, it's usually because they're lying, right?
That's true.
Because all you have to do is go back and ask the people that they were leading at the time that they were leading, asking if they failed or not.
Right. It wasn't quite that bed of roses.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's what I always say to people, you know, as we were doing some things at Bridgeway and they would say, Jeff, man, you're killing it. And I would say, go ask my staff. Right.
So they have a different opinion. Maybe.
Right. They'll give you a better idea of just how awesome this really is.
Right.
And so because there's a lot of learning and growing. So initiative, I think, is huge. Characters, I think, is big one for me. I can train competencies, right? We can work on your capacity. We can even try to work on the chemistry as a part of the organization, but you've got to bring some character to this.
Yeah.
Integrity has got to be a priority. And by integrity, I don't mean simply someone who always gets it right. I mean someone who has the humility of acknowledging even when they get it wrong. And yeah. I think too often we devalue that part of our pursuit of integrity. Because integrity has the ability to say, I broke it and it's my fault and I don't have to pass that off on someone else.
Right.
So I want to see that integrity. I want to see a sense of vision. I want to see a sense of courage. I want to see a sense of vulnerability, right?
Yeah.
I want to see them being able to live amongst others as though those other people matter, where those other people that they're leading aren't just simply cogs in their machine, but their lives matter. So that if I'm going to reproduce myself in someone else, they've got to have their capacity to reproduce themselves in someone else as well. And if this is just about them reaching their fullest potential at the expense of everyone else, I don't have time for that. That's not right. What I'm going to do. That's not who I'm going to invest in. So I think those are kind of key for me. Those are key elements in terms of what the conversation might look like in terms of the kind of people that I would identify. I had a great executive coach when I was in Pekin. He was a Caterpillar executive. He was a major leader at Caterpillar, the corporation.
Yeah.
And he would meet with me regularly and we would talk about these kinds of things. And I found that here's a man whose kingdom heart resonated with everything that was in mine. He had been given opportunities to lead at levels that maybe I would never have an opportunity to lead at. And yet he was willing to invest in me and tell me and teach me the kinds of things that I needed to be looking for along the way. And so I was able to receive that mentorship and then hopefully pass that mentorship down to someone else.
That's great. You know, one of the first times I was assigned to a new team that I was overseeing here at Olivet, I went into our first team meeting, you know, and I was nervous, right? I mean, because here I brought in a couple of vice presidents, right? Former vice president, current vice president, who is my boss and who is his predecessor, his boss, all who had come up through the position I was currently taking over, right? And it was incredibly intimidating because I'm thinking, my goodness, here is like the guys, right? You know, the people who I'm following in their footsteps. And then at the other end of the table were our student workers, right? Who have literally not graduated with their undergraduate bachelor's degree. And I'm going, how am I supposed to span this 50-year age gap, not to mention the amount of experience and expertise difference between the people on my team, and there's several people in between. What am I supposed to do with this? We had a great meeting. We went out to lunch afterwards, and the student workers came up back into the office, and they said, Carlos, we realized today that you're our legacy. And I said, what do you mean? I'm your legacy. I'm not your legacy. What are you talking about? They said, yeah, look at these people who've gone before you, and now you're going to, you know, you're in that spot. And they're going to be like, then they said, I'm going to bring my kids to campus and say, I knew Dr. Lawnberger when he was just Carlos, you know. And I said, no, hold up. Here's the reality. I'm not your legacy. You're mine.
Amen to that.
You know, what you do well beyond this place, where you go from this point on in your life, will tell more about my leadership than anything else.
Absolutely.
You know, and yeah. Seeing them succeed and seeing and hoping and helping them prepare for life beyond being on my team is huge, especially when you're, for me, when you're dealing with student workers, college students who are, you know, even just still preparing for life after college, right? So for you,
that's so good, Carlos.
Thanks. It's one of those things that, you know, I think leaders have to be mindful of their real spot, right? Mm-hmm. So for you, what are some of the things that you've taken real excitement in, or why you take some real excitement in the success of leaders who have served under you and then gone on to do something else?
Yeah. As you're talking, I was thinking about how often we as leaders try to increase our own shelf life.
Yeah.
Right? We all have a shelf life, like how important we are for however long that is. But we spend so much time trying to build our own shelf life, protect our own brands, preserve our own legacies, when you just nailed it. Like, the greatest legacy are the people that rise to levels far beyond our individual capacity. Yeah. I think for me, that's the greatest excitement. When I watch the people that I've invested in and I've spoken into their lives and I've challenged them, and I see them starting to lean into and grow beyond where I was at their place and at their stage of life or at their stage in ministry. I think for me, that's the greatest joy. I remember we were at an Exponential conference, and Exponential is one of the largest church planting conferences in all of the globe, right? It's huge. And the mantra for that one was this idea of being a hero maker. And so I had an incredible group of leaders on my staff, one of which was started as a children's ministry, then youth ministry, and then families ministry, and then eventually she became a campus pastor for us. And I went to this conference on Exponential, and we were talking about and thinking about what it would look like for us to continue to be an organization that invested in others for them to be empowered to grow beyond ourselves. And so my wife and I stayed in Florida a few days after the conference just to kind of hang out together. And we're literally in line at Universal Studios. And my wife and I are just staying there, and I felt the Lord impress upon my life, like, okay, big boy, it's time for you to live this out.
Yeah.
Easter's in a few weeks. You're not preaching Easter. Give it to Lindsay.
Yes. I remember you telling me about
this. And
I
went,
great.
And I'm sitting there going, oh, hold up. Like, no, like, I'm a offensive lineman, not a quarterback, but even the offensive lineman gets to play in the Super Bowl.
Exactly,
like,
right?
Easter is the Super Bowl for pastors. And I'm thinking to myself, man, like, give that away. And so I texted Lindsay and I said, Lindsay, do you have a message for Easter? And she thought I meant for me, like I was searching for something to
you
preach
were
about.
Preach.
She sent me back, figure
out what to preach on Easter. So can you help me out?
So she sent me back two words. She said, the gospel. And
Jesus.
I went, no, I don't think you're hearing me right. Like, not for me, but for you. And she's like, I'll have to get back on you. This is too much to do over text. And I remember kind of walking with her over the next few weeks. And she received that opportunity, and she stood up there on Easter weekend and absolutely killed it.
Yeah.
She preached in a way that just inspired our people. And I sat back on Facebook, of course, the rest of the day, and never got a kudos.
Right.
Hers was blowing up.
Right.
Right. Everybody was giving her the kudos.
Right.
I didn't even get the, hey, pastor, thanks for letting someone else preach kudo. Right. But it was in that moment that I sat there and thinking to myself, if I wasn't there today, if I didn't even show up, if I was sick today, if something had come down where I just couldn't be there, it was good.
Yeah.
And for me, there was great peace in that because I knew that the mission, the why, mm-hmm. wasn't simply dependent upon me. And so constantly reinforcing that and seeing and watching people grow and seeing the ways in which they deal with challenge. Now, that has come, and I think probably one of the questions you're going to ask next, but that has come on the backside of a lot of failures in that process as yep. well.
Good segue.
And moments where I've cheated some of those leaders I've coached. And so I've had to kind of work through some of that as well. But those successes, watching them grow, watching them celebrate what God is doing in their life and the growth that they're experiencing, that far exceeds. I had several leaders who I felt like their ceiling was far higher than mine. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I would do them a disservice if I limited them by my capacity instead of encouraging them to go beyond what they felt like they were capable of.
That's great. And that is the dilemma of leadership, right? To somehow find a way to balance your role and responsibilities in what you're supposed to do with your quote unquote job, you know, whatever capacity that is, you know, nonprofits, churches, businesses, whatever that may be, right? Wherever you are leading, balancing what you're supposed to do with the development of and the elevating of other leaders.
Amen.
Right?
Yeah, that's
right. The old saying is, you know, my job is to work myself out of a job.
Right.
You know,
right.
And there's a lot of truth to that, but hopefully my job keeps me in a place where I can continue to develop more leaders, right? You know,
right.
And identify the next person when we send out that person, when we launch this place, you know, God always brings up another leader to work with. In that, you've had some great successes. And I remember talking to you shortly after that Easter and seeing this is the balance, the joy and the excitement and the struggle mm-hmm. of watching your team member just excel and just nail it, right? But also going, but what about me too,
yeah, right?
You know,
right.
I'm supposed to be in there somewhere. And those are natural human inner conversations for leaders, right?
Right, right. Absolutely.
With every success, you know what's coming next, the next question. Whatever, with every success in developing leaders, because there's a human factor, there's a human element in there, right? There's probably 3, 4, 5 dozen failures, right? And of course, we don't want to dig into we don't want to dig up all those things for you.
Yeah, this is an accounting session.
Yeah, no, that's not my lane.
I'll go after this one. Thanks. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. But for you as a leader, how do you deal with personally some of those people that you really thought would take off and just kind of dropped?
Man, so this is the segment of this talk that my entire previous staff and anybody I've mentored is holding their breath to see if I'll be honest.
Is he going to talk about me? Yeah. Is my name coming up?
Yeah, or just if I'm going to be honest, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think that's one of the challenges for leaders is will we be actually honest about those failings, right? So let me just name a few of them for me. So number one was pride, and it was a reverse pride. So typically we think in terms of pride and arrogance as the wanting to be in the spotlight. My pride came in thinking I could develop anybody for anything at any time for any capacity.
No matter what their natural abilities were.
No matter what their natural, so that's where it settled in. Give me enough time with them and I will get them to be rock stars, right? And that pride settled in where I started putting people on the wrong seat on the bus. Because I felt like, oh, I can work with this or I can get this to where it needs to be without maybe because there was such an excitement that I was feeling about the empowerment process that I don't know that I was always as intentional as I should have been about really trying to understand where someone fit and getting it right on the front end. You're always going to get it a little bit wrong and you can adjust as you go. But I got it really wrong for a few people. And I felt like I cheated those people by getting it wrong. And I would say this, you can develop capacity and competency, but it usually helps if they've demonstrated at least a bit of competency in that area before you get started. I am not God and I can't create ex nihilo, right? But I had to learn
that. Out of nothing. Right.
Out of nothing. Like I needed to learn that. I needed to be more patient and put less of a title on someone or put them in not put them as in charge as much on the front end as I maybe did to give them a chance to cultivate some of those. One of the things that I think probably I did fail on was I didn't have hard enough conversations consistently. I wanted to give the benefit of the doubt. I'm really patient. I'm not one who just enjoys a lot of conflict. I'm going to just be honest with you. It's not right in my, if you're an Enneagram person, I am not an eight. I am a one. So eights love conflict in Enneagram. Ones have harsh inner critics. And so number ones tend to call ourselves into question before we call anybody else into question. And so I'm not one who just absolutely loves conflict. But there were some moments probably along the way where I would have served the person better had I had harder conversations. And then I think another piece of this was for me is that I was trying to do too many at one time. I mentioned, I think in our last podcast, one point we had 14 people on staff, volunteer, part-time, full-time, and all of them, with the exception of myself, had come up internally. Which means none of them prior to me had sort of professional ministry experience, right?
Right.
And I was incensed. They were all direct reports to me. Well, in an organization, 14 people, that doesn't work.
It's a lot.
Right. So we were constantly trying to figure out how do we reorganize this thing because each one of them needed certain levels of mentorship that some of them would feel cheated that they weren't getting because I was having to spend more time with someone else. And I really probably needed to set what my limit was at any given moment. I need to be with these three people over this next year or two. Get them to where I need them because then I can multiply their capacity to take people under them as well. But that was a challenge. And with the exception of a couple people, there wasn't a lot of folks that I could just immediately start handing people off to.
Yeah.
So I found myself cheating them, and that is on me, right? And so when they would want meetings or want to get with me, that's the natural thing that a mentee would want from a mentor.
Of course.
And when I would feel strung out with not only leading an organization, but also counseling people in the congregation and also mentoring a number of different people and starting a church plant residency program and getting people ready for church planting, it ultimately led me to get too, you know, my margin wasn't large enough to be able to give people the adequate engagement, encouragement that they needed along that process, which then I think probably led into another one that I think is probably maybe even another podcast we do at some point. Have a conversation about it, but is this idea of emotional regulation. The less margin we have as leaders, the more strung out we feel to be responsible for everything in our sphere, the challenge that it becomes for us emotionally, right? And how much emotional reserves we have to give. And one of the things that I didn't realize early on was how many people were dependent upon my mood, like how I carried myself into the room and whether or not they even felt like they could ask me for some mentorship because they felt maybe like, man, he looks tired or he looks already stressed or they would joke with me, he's already taken off his glasses and rubbed his forehead three times today. and so I think I should have realized earlier on that if I would have given myself more margin, done a better job at emotional regulation, that I could have probably given myself more fully to a select group without trying to do too many at any given time so that they then could get what they needed for the future. And I think those are some areas where I failed.
Yeah. And that's always tough as a leader, right? Like we're supposed to have the answers.
Right.
People look to you and they notice little things like how many times you've already taken off your glasses, rubbed your eyes and gone, oh my goodness, what do we do about this?
Right.
Right. You know, and it's almost that Job concept that as one was still talking, another one came.
Yes.
And then
that
one was still talking, another one, and these issues, you know, because everybody wants to know, like, what do you want me to do with this? What are we supposed, like, this is more than what I feel like my role is, you know, has the authority to decide. So leader, Jeff, what do you want me to do? And they notice, you know, they notice when you're tired. They notice when you're frazzled. They notice when you've taken your glasses off and rubbed your eyes three times already.
Well, and it didn't help that, and this is even something that's kind of interesting just in terms of the structuring of space, is that I literally had, so we had an open office with the exception of my little office on the side. So everybody sat in one big space where they had open desks. We didn't even have cubicles. So anytime I had to go anywhere, I had to walk the gauntlet. I had to walk through them all. So I could have literally gotten off the phone having a heartbreaking conversation with someone in my car, because we were dealing with some hard, hard situations. I could have had someone just get angry at something we did the prior weekend or whatever. And if I'd had a secret door into my office, I probably would have taken it because I'm not one. I'd never explode. I don't yell at people. I'm not that kind of leader. And so I internalize more than I do externalize. So a lot of times I become very stoic and I don't necessarily respond or react. And so I will have maybe dealt with something in the car, but then I have to walk through them all and everyone's looking at me like, give me 5 minutes in my office. Right. Let me have a cup of coffee and I may be fine in 5 minutes.
Sure.
But now everybody's on edge because I've walked in and I needed to be more aware. That's not necessarily a reflection on them, but I needed to be more aware of the way in which I carried myself, because the people that we're mentoring, the people we're empowering, the people that are drawing from us are learning from us at every step along the way.
Right.
And when they see certain things, they don't know how to process or they don't know how to answer for those things. That's a tough thing for them. And so I needed to be able to pull them alongside and say, this is why I feel the way I feel. This is what I'm dealing with. This is what I'm navigating and negotiating right now. And so probably what you're seeing from me is this.
Yeah.
And so I think that was one of the challenges. I tend to be considered a hard person to read. I sort of cultivated a discipline of stoicism. That's just, for me, it's sort of an emotionally regulative tool that's not always helpful.
Yeah.
Because some people interpret it as a jerk face. I got resting jerk face.
Right.
I think, some people like, I went to lunch yesterday with.
Are you mad?
Yeah,
you mad?
Right. I went to lunch with a bunch of colleagues yesterday, and I just was quiet. Right. And I didn't say anything. I just ate because I was in a hurry, and I had several people ask me afterwards, like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, I just had my zucchini noodles. That's it. Like, just zucchini noodles.
Maybe you weren't happy about the zucchini noodles.
I wasn't real happy about those, but I was really happy that they got them for me, but they're zucchini noodles. Anyways, so.
How happy can you be?
Right, when you're eating
when
zucchini.
You're eating zucchini
Come
noodles.
Come on now. And everybody's eating these like beef stroganoff. I'm like, I want the beef stroganoff, but I can't. I think some of those elements for me are pretty huge.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So, one last question for our time together this month. There's the failures, and we know that. And as tough as it is for leaders to admit that, we have to own those things. But beauty, the true joy of leadership is being able to rejoice in the successes of your people, right? And sometimes those come from the most unexpected places and the most unanticipated places. People, you know, and people, you know, outpunt the coverage if you want to say, and they just go beyond what you ever expected of them. So what are some situation, different stories, a particular story of real joy that you got to have in someone you were developing that truly went further than you expected?
Carlos, that's a great question. And I think I'd want to say first off is maybe some of the greatest joys that I had in watching people grow and excel is early on, we had seen an influx of people coming to our church who were completely disconnected from the faith. And I was overwhelmed trying to, in essence, disciple all of them. So I identified 12 leaders who I said, I'm going to create a program where they spend 20 weeks with me and I'm going to invest in them. And then they go on and invest in others.
Right.
And so I sort of reached out to 12 people. All of them said yes. Right. Like said, yeah, we're in. Right. So I met with them for an hour and a half a week. We went through a curriculum that I created, read books together, wrote papers together, and talked about everything it looks like to invest in the lives of others. And I did that three different times. So 36 leaders, or I think it ended up being 42 because we had a couple that had extra, about 42 leaders that went through this process over about a 2-year period. Some of those who had demonstrated, again, initiative, buy into the church, involvement and investment in ministry, but who would have seen themselves as incapable of doing some of the very things that I was asking them to do, to see them step up. And to watch that we had a number of them eventually receive their local license and now district license, not just at one church, but now at three different churches plus a campus.
Yeah.
some of the leaders that I got to watch make investment in that.
Yeah.
I have had the opportunity to walk with a young man who's in Peoria now, where we started. He had asked me to coach him where he was, which wasn't where I was.
Right.
And then as we began to form a relationship, God just sort of connected hearts. And I said, would you come be where I am and launch from there? And he did. And watching him grow and mature as a young leader. And now he not only has planted a church, but he's also on the key leadership team for a massive nonprofit in Peoria called the Dream Center. He's just an incredible, gifted young man.
Yeah.
Lindsay, who I've mentioned already, every time I removed the ceiling, she rose to the occasion. There was nothing ever stopping her. And that was a great, great joy for me to watch. And so, yeah, it's hard for me to just point at one particular situation, but to watch just the generalized overall empowerment that I was witnessing as people were stepping into and embracing who they were called to be, and leaning out into the future of their ministry. The staff that I had a chance to work with, just an amazing group of people who I loved deeply and dearly. And I'll give you one more story. This isn't to end on a somber note, but one of my favorites was a young man who had started. I mean, he's my age, so I say young man, but he was
still young
in ministry.
Don't worry.
Yeah, there we go.
If you're old already, I'm in trouble.
That's right. So he had started under the ministry of Dale Schaefer at Bridgeway when Dale was there, and he was one of those guys that showed initiative, whose hands were in everything. And we were in the process of a transition for our second campus, and he had done everything we'd asked, continued to raise above the expectations, and it became his opportunity, his moment.
Yeah. And the timing was right.
Timing was right, and Chris had an opportunity to step into his first role as a lead in our second campus. And at 46 years old, preached his first Easter service, was leading his own campus and just knocking out of the park. Now, Chris, we lost Chris unexpectedly, which is, again, part of the sadness that comes with leadership, is that sometimes you have these broken-hearted moments.
Right.
But to watch the impact and the imprint that he left upon everybody that he ministered to was an incredible gift for me, that I got to play a little role in his story. And to maybe invest in the moments that we had at coffee as he was learning how to lead and have hard conversations with people in ways that wasn't sort of like pointed business wise,
right.
You know, and because that was his background. And it was a great joy for me to watch and be a part of that.
It's always exciting to see people succeed. And, you know, even just sitting here looking at, you know, like you're just smiling ear to ear, just thinking about that life and the impact that, not necessarily, even just necessarily that you were able to have, but that you were able to watch him have,
yeah.
Right? Like beyond what you do yourself, but seeing people step up and lead in their own right. So, yeah. Jeff, thank you for being.
It's what an honor.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Just a couple of resources. If you're ever looking into leaders, developing leaders, look at Dave Ferguson's book, Hero Maker. Look into Patrick Lencioni's Hungry, Humble, Smart framework, and you'll get a good place to start there with how to develop leaders to be a leader who develops leaders. Remember, folks, when we're leaders, we're not just in the people business. Our business is people. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Leaning In Leadership Podcast from Olivet Nazarene University and Shine.fm. If you enjoy this episode, please comment on it, rate it, and share it wherever you stream your content. You can follow Leaning In Leadership on social media and watch for upcoming episodes released the first Thursday of every month.